Today's show is sponsored by Okta. In these challenging times, we're all looking for simplicity, something that just works. The last thing you want to do is spend time building authentication for your new curbside pickup app. Because if you're spending time building your own authentication systems, it's time spent not making your customers happy. This is where Okta makes it simple. Okta's cloud-based authentication services are easy to set up, and they already integrate with the tools and applications you use today. Okta is trusted by companies like HPE, Splunk, CarMax, GitLab, and Cengage, plus many, many more. To take the hassle out of your authentication needs, visit okta.com/cloud and learn how to get started today. That's okta.com/cloud.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. For the cloud news of the week this week, we're going to jump right in. We just have a couple quick stories. For those that are wondering as well, AWS reInvent is kicking off this week, a multi-week event, lots and lots of announcements, and we're going to dig into all of that in the future. So if you're looking for that for cloud news of the week, stay tuned for that very soon. For this week, though, we have two quick articles to talk about. First one is Splunk. Splunk is off and buying more companies again, this time Flowmill. I was not familiar with Flowmill, but Flowmill is all about network visibility and observability. And this follows a bunch of recent acquisitions, including two just in the last couple months. So over the last 2 years, I went and looked it up. It's about six startups, if I remember correctly, and two, Plumber and Rigor, that were both recently talked about in Cloud News of the Week. So if that is interesting to you, go take a look at the article. And then the second one, and one we certainly couldn't ignore, because there's a good portion of the internet and websites that were impacted by this last week. The infamous Amazon US East 1 region went down. And it's been a while since we had a big outage like this. And as these systems get more complex and all of these services are offered, this happens every once in a while. And kudos to Amazon for really being forthcoming in exactly what happened. The post-mortem on this, go take a look at it. It's very long, very detailed, and was very fascinating to read. It all came down to, at the end of the day, they added some capacity to the Kinesis service on the front end. And there is a front end to back end sharding mechanism and shard mapping that has to happen. And when they added the capacity, there was they basically ran out of threads on the front end, and it kind of caused some cascading failures. And they actually ended up rebooting basically the entire Kinesis front end. And you know, when you think about rebooting something like that and something that is multi-sharded and the size and scale of that, that's no easy task. And so it goes into what happened there and all the cascading failures and all of the things that are impacted, as well as what they're going to be doing in the future to correct that. So again, kudos to them for getting through that. You know, of course, these things happen. They don't happen often anymore, and it's good to see the both the root cause as well as the preventative actions going forward. So with that, we're going to wrap up Cloud News of the Week, and we're going to move on to our main segment.
Today's show is sponsored by Datadog. Start monitoring EC2, RDS, ECS, and all your other AWS services in minutes with Datadog. Whether you have 10 instances or 10,000, Datadog automatically tracks hosts as you scale. Visualize metrics, automatically alert on anomalies, and collaborate across teams to quickly troubleshoot issues before they escalate. Give it a try with a free 14-day trial by visiting datadog.com/cloudcast, and Datadog will send you a comfy, complimentary t-shirt. That's datadog.com/cloudcast. Today's show is sponsored by Cloud Academy. Listen up, y'all. This is a great offer. With everyone using the same cloud platforms, winning and losing comes down to having the best talent to build products better and faster. Cloud Academy is the training platform of choice for Fortune 500 companies and thousands of tech professionals around the world. Thousands of video courses, learning paths, practical hands-on labs in real-world cloud environments, Cloud Academy has tools designed to help teams assess, build, and validate critical cloud skills. Most importantly, Cloud Academy stays agile, challenging you with new content, labs, and tons of features that ensure your skills stay relevant and everyone can level up. They cover everything from cloud certifications to DevOps to security to programming languages. You can get started now at cloudacademy.com. For a limited time, Cloudcast listeners can lock in 50% off the monthly price for life. Just put in the coupon code CLOUDCAST at checkout. It's a great way to pursue certifications or just build cloud expertise. Again, that's cloudacademy.com and use the coupon code CLOUDCAST to lock in 50% off the monthly price. And we're back, and a little bit unusual setup for us here after this holiday weekend. Aaron, good to have you back on the show, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've been kind of, you know, you record one or I record one, and but we're finally getting the band back together here a little bit, and we've got both of us this week.
Yeah, I think we'll end up doing a couple here before the end of the year. So it's always good. And we're going to talk about a topic that we don't cover a lot on the show, kind of because it's part of my day job. But, you know, we just finished KubeCon, and we finished, you know, a couple of CNCF events here in the last 3 to 6 months. So we thought we would kind of dive into a sort of a state of Kubernetes for the year 2020, kind of see where we were. And we decided, well, the best way to do that is to bring back kind of a really good friend of the show, somebody who lives and breathes this stuff, is very much an expert in it. So Nigel Poulton, welcome back to the show, man. Great to have you back.
Honestly, it's a pleasure to be back. And I feel really honored, actually, that both of you were on. You know, let's just make it that you both came on because it was me, right?
Absolutely.
Of course.
Absolutely. I feel like a repeat offender, actually. I think this is number three, isn't it?
Yeah. Third time on. You're getting up there with our all-time guests. So listen, you've been on a couple of times. It's been, unfortunately, a couple of years. So for anybody who isn't familiar with all the really good work you do around teaching people containers and Kubernetes and Linux and all this new stuff, give folks a little bit of your background and then give us a couple of highlights of the cool projects you're working on.
So like you say, I'm Nigel. I spend most of my life these days, and I have done for probably the last 5, 6, 7 years now, writing books and creating video training courses around containers and Kubernetes, Docker and the cloud, stuff like that. So I maintain a couple of books now. I've got to tell you this, right? So one of my books is called Docker Deep Dive. My other book is called The Kubernetes Book. But if you're asking, like, what cool projects am I working on at the moment? A project I just finished. This is really geeky, actually. I did a Klingon edition of the Kubernetes book. So it's a custom front cover with the Kubernetes book and everything else written in Klingon font or Klingon text. And it has the intro to the book with a bunch of Klingon stuff in there, all written in Klingon and what have you. But then the rest of the book is obviously written in English. It's like not a collector's edition, because obviously I'm not, you know, famous enough or anything like that for people to buy collector's editions. I don't know, maybe we could call it like a geeks edition or something. If you're into Star Trek and you're into Kubernetes or something, get yourself the Klingon edition of the Kubernetes book. In fact, this gets worse, because it's boldly going where no other Kubernetes book has gone before. I'm so sorry.
Well done. So it's a bit of an Easter egg.
A little bit. Do you know what? I had a lot of fun doing it, because it's really hard work writing books, especially technical books that you try to make sort of engaging and interesting. And when I had the idea to do this, just to change the color of the front cover to be more of a Klingon blood red type color, and then to use the font and stuff like that on the first few intro pages. And I do this kind of intro saying, you know, the Klingon High Command of commissioned installations of Kubernetes, you know, just a bit of a really geeky story. And it was one of those side projects where I was able to take something that I've put a lot of effort into and then say, let's just have a little bit of fun with it. Yeah. So I'm super pleased with that.
Very cool. Nice. Very, very cool. Aaron, and that's a perfect reason for you to come back to the show, man. We get into sci-fi and that's your domain, man.
Absolutely.
That's all you.
So Nigel, let's roll into the state of Kubernetes, right? So as we're kind of rolling into the end of 2020, tell everyone a little bit about, you know, the level of maturity of the users, the usage that's out there. What's kind of, you know, a quick state of Kubernetes?
Yeah, so if I was to start by saying where I feel the level of maturity of the project is, and then maybe switch tack onto users. So I feel like, I mean, Kubernetes has been around since effectively the summer of 2014. So it's not, I don't know, it's not as new as some people think, yeah? And I really feel that the closer you look at certainly the core components, the core bits and pieces to run applications, pretty solid these days and well-baked. You know, pods and deployment and service, even Ingress these days is looking pretty decent and stable. Maybe I should caveat Ingress, actually. But a lot of the core functionality is pretty solid now. And I'm starting to see more and more people using it and more people needing to skill up on it. I felt very much that I think 2019 was like a big year for hosted Kubernetes, where all the different cloud providers gave you this like off-the-shelf, easy-to-consume Kubernetes, which was great for a lot of people. You know, you're an organization that maybe, well, hopefully should only really care about your applications and your customers and your products, and you don't really want to invest a lot in how to build Kubernetes yourself. Those hosted Kubernetes options from, look, there was everybody, right? But all the major cloud providers offered that. It's like this really easy on-ramp. Yes, let's deploy our applications to Kubernetes, but let's not go through the hard work of trying to build a highly available Kubernetes cluster ourselves. So that was 2019, and I think that really onboarded a lot of people. And don't get me wrong, I mean, hosted Kubernetes was massive in 2020 as well. But for me, very much 2020 was the year of almost making, I don't know, persistent workloads first-class citizens. So there'd been a lot of work in the past had gone into the container storage interface and the CSI that sort of is the primitives to let you plug external battle-hardened storage systems into your Kubernetes clusters. So your applications running on Kubernetes can use all of like your favorites, you know, highly available, high-performance storage, whether it's on your cloud or whether it's in your own data center. So like that work was kind of baked. But this year in 2020, I just feel like a load of the storage companies and data management vendors really stepped up to the plate in bringing their own CSI drivers, and then over and above that started making it like starting to offer us almost portals where you can say, look, I just want a bunch of storage from XYZ storage array out there plugged into my cluster used by this app, making that kind of battle-hardened storage more consumable by your Kubernetes apps. So I think like 2020, we've got a lot of the plumbing in place now for next year, where I think that, like, I don't know, more enterprise type organizations will be more comfortable deploying like more line of business applications. I think you probably know what I mean. Like, we've been able to do the stateless stuff really easy for years. But now I feel we're really getting to the point where enterprises can look at it and say, do you know what? I can deploy proper line of business applications that persist data onto Kubernetes. And I'm waffling, gents. So
yeah, no. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, if you look at even some of the acquisitions that happened or some of the things you see, so like Portworx, who was one of the leading kind of storage players in this space, got acquired. Kasten, who was, you know, focused on backup and recovery and some things, got acquired. So that ecosystem starting to, you know, people are spending money in that space. You've seen SAP, who, you know, is probably the, you know, the monster of all sort of stateful applications, is doing things around SAP. You see AWS, extending out like what kind of storage you can use with their services. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it makes, in terms of just, sometimes we're a little ahead of, you know, what people are doing, but I think you're right. The foundation is there for those things. You get a chance, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to kind of reach out to you is because you're so involved with, you know, people reading your book, seeing your trainings on A Cloud Guru and Pluralsight and stuff. You probably get some insights into just, you know, what are new people kind of getting involved with if they're looking at Kubernetes, or people looking at more advanced stuff. Do you get a sense of like, are the people, at least the ones that you get visibility to, do they identify as kind of infrastructure people? Do they identify as sort of DevSec, or DevOps people? Or is it sort of application developers? Or is it, you know, it's kind of all across the board? What do you see in terms of who's driving this? Because that's one of the conversations about Kubernetes we always have. Is it still an infrastructure thing? Is it a tool for developers? Is it somewhere in between?
Yeah, I do feel that it's somewhere in between, but I have seen, I would say probably over this last year, and that's kind of finger in the air, right? But I have definitely seen an uptick on infrastructure people working for more traditional large enterprises reaching out to me, either asking me about training, or they've taken my courses and they're reaching out to say, you know, thanks very much. It was really great. What do you feel the next steps are? Whereas if we were to wind the clock back literally just a year, I did see a mix of dev and infrastructure people, but their email addresses and their LinkedIn profiles were very much more in the sort of cloud first startup type organizations. And so it feels to me like, just from the people that reach out to me, almost as if, I'm not saying that enterprises are deploying it at scale yet, because I don't think many are, but people are starting to at least hear about it within their organizations and starting to get some push from above to say, right, we're going to be starting to look more seriously, at least at Kubernetes and containers. So let's start getting people skilled up. That's definitely something that I've seen in this last year.
And Nigel, where do you see, of those you've talked to, where are folks, two-part question, where are folks succeeding and where are they still struggling? Is it, you know, requirements of Kubernetes? Like, where's the learning curve and the stumbling blocks as well as the successes?
Yeah. So I think that, and I don't know how well this necessarily answers the question, okay, but I think people are succeeding when they're deploying new applications. So something that's net new and it's not necessarily business critical or anything like that. And within an enterprise, you've got like a SWAT team or something on it, you know, like your most skilled and trusted engineers that look at the forward thinking projects. People are doing all right there. And if you like work for a company that runs just about everything in the cloud and you're used to kind of just learning stuff on the fly, I am seeing increased success there. Where I think people are struggling is now that it's not just the early adopters and the early adopters within like an organization, as we're starting to see more of the rank and file, and I mean that respectfully, okay? I'm starting to have a lot more conversations where people are struggling with concepts. So the concept of like, you know, declarative manifest files and infrastructure as code and things like that, where people may have come from, you know, quite a siloed organization where, you know, you might have been doing Linux for years, or you're the HP UX person or the network person or the storage or middleware or something. And being introduced to new concepts and trying to adapt them to your own patterns at work, people are struggling, because I do feel like, I mean, we have this almost, and I'm guilty of it myself, right, where we compare containerized applications and cloud native applications to the switch we made from physical to virtual servers, and as if like this is just another step change like that. And I understand there are situations where you can lift and shift, but for a lot of people, it's a lot more. When you're looking to refactor your applications and your infrastructure and the architecture behind it, people are then starting to struggle, like, you know, we throw buzzwords like declarative and manifest files and desired state and reconciliation loops and infrastructure as code out there. And I'm as guilty as anybody, right? We sometimes forget that not everybody naturally gets what that means. And some people we kind of frighten people off still with that. Like Kubernetes itself has got easier to get Kubernetes, like from a hosted cloud provider or whatever. Even installing it yourself now is easier than it was. And the learning curve itself is to get an application on it is getting easier. But I feel like we just still throw the terminology at people. And quite often, if you've, you know, sat in a very kind of stable job for the last 5, 10 plus sometimes years, and we start throwing, you know, buzzwords like that at people, they're just like, oh, please just give me a break, will you? So people are struggling with the concept sometimes because it is very much a mindset change, I think.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen that. I you know, you think about some of the companies that have been, really visible in the whole container space and Kubernetes space. So whether it's, you know, CoreOS who got acquired by Rancher, CoreOS that got acquired by Red Hat or Rancher, or, you know, Docker when they first started doing different kinds of Linux, even the most basic concept of like, hey, you know, you're not going to go touch your Linux anymore, right? Like, you're not going to install a whole bunch of like RPMs on there. You're not going to SSH into them. Like that, that to me is the one of the real big ones is people are like, but that's what we do. Like, that's how I manage a Linux machine. And you're like, no. That agent now is a container and you just don't touch it anymore. And it's like, you know, it's, you know, everybody flips over on their head and they're like, okay, you're going to have to explain that to me. And that I think the thing that we do that we screw up in our industry is like, it, instead of explaining the concept of like, you don't do this thing anymore, we create this word or we use a word, you know, we use a word like immutable and people are like, I've never heard that word before. And so I don't know what that word means. And then this concept, I don't know what you understand, what you're saying is. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think it's going to be increasingly important as well, you know, as we start to onboard a lot of the more mainstream of enterprises, as we bring along your more traditional Windows and Linux and Oracle and SQL Server DBAs and people like that, we're going to have to be a lot more careful. And, you know, I think that KubeCon are trying to do that, or the CNCF with like things like the 101 track at events like KubeCon. I mean, we can always do better, don't get me wrong. But like last year at KubeCon in San Diego, the last in-person one that we had, it was just, it was full of people that were there for the first time and really new to Kubernetes. And I did a book signing. So I was really privileged to like meet well over like, well, hundreds of people. And so many of them are like, I love the event and the buzz, but so much is just over my head. And we just need to get better at doing that.
Yeah, that's Aaron, that's the same feedback we get from this show. Like, that's the reason why in 2021 we'll probably end up going back and doing Cloudcast Basics. People, they want a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll add even another layer to it. And then it's more of commentary. We don't necessarily have to go into it because I think we have here. But, you know, we talked about terminology and then we talked about, you know, the concepts being completely different. But then you also have all the projects, right? You have, right? And so there's just this sprawl and people almost need the roadmap to manage the sprawl, right? And it is quite a journey and it does have quite a steep learning curve at times because you have to understand the concepts, you have to understand the terminology, then you have to understand all the projects, then you have to put it all together. And so it gets, it's one of these things that, it, you know, especially to your point, if you're coming from an old school way now or more traditional way now of managing the, you know, the objects and tools in your environment, it's steep without a doubt.
You know what? Like, I spend my life doing this and I'm really passionate about it. I love it. And even I, at times, like, I just can't keep up. It's hard. And I'm increasingly meeting people that don't care and don't want to care. And that's absolutely fair and fine. And I think that, like, so even for somebody like me that, you know, almost does this as a hobby, and I struggle to keep up. And we're going to have people that, look, this is just a job for them. It's not a passion. And they're just like, you know, my head's spinning. Just look, I mean, gosh, if we look at the, what is it, the CNCF landscape diagram or whatever, it's like, it's one of the most complex diagrams I've ever seen in my life, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. There's a richness there, but it's overwhelming. So, yeah.
Let me ask, I'm curious, because I get this question all the time. You know, for a long time, the Kubernetes project was, hey, it's Kubernetes is the same. There's all these different ways you can get Kubernetes distributions. And then, you know, somebody starts with it, and let's say they start with an EKS on AWS, or they start with OpenShift, or they start with, you know, Docker. Like, do you find that people are quickly like, well, the Kubernetes part kind of feels the same, but then, like, their storage is different, or and they don't kind of realize that Kubernetes doesn't include everything? Do you find that much?
100%. I get that a lot. And I think that going forward, maybe like for 2021, something like Anthos or similar from other providers or whoever it is that maybe sits above and almost commoditizes Kubernetes as much as it commoditizes, whether it's on-prem or whether it's in X cloud or Y cloud. We're not there with it yet, but I almost wonder if there's something going to come along that sits above all of this and we're having the conversation in the future, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, Kubernetes is involved under the hood there somewhere, but we almost care less about it than we do now, which, you know, at least in my mind, the way I would envision it, can only be a good thing. And that's coming from somebody who spends their life working with Kubernetes and loves it. Don't get me wrong. I just think we have to get to the point where you don't have to be a Kubernetes expert to deploy and manage applications on Kubernetes. Because right now, you're right, like that core of Kubernetes is great, but then everything that plugs into it, and I do think that, I don't blame them either if this is the way it's working, but, you know, cloud providers and people sort of integrating their own bespoke systems in to make it more sticky and more difficult to move to another cloud provider. I don't blame them, but it just complicates it. And it's like, that has to get better next year.
Yeah.
Now, from a recommendation standpoint, right, because there is lots of ways to engage, like we just talked about, right? There's the DIY with, you know, the open source versions. There's vendor distributions that you can get it on your laptop. You can get it hosted. Yeah. What do you recommend, and what trends are you seeing with people that are getting started as the best way to engage?
Okay. So I massively recommend Docker Desktop to everybody, which comes with a single node Kubernetes installation in there for you. I checked mine last week, and it was maybe I'm on the Edge release or something, but I was on Kubernetes 19 dot something, which is pretty much hot off the press. But what I like about Docker Desktop is that it's just dead simple. Other options are out there, don't get me wrong. I just find it the easiest for me to install on a Mac and a Windows PC and stuff, and I'm up and running. So I can sort of play around there. Massively recommend VS Code with the various plugins for people. If you are learning Kubernetes and you need something really easy to get started on, look, there are plenty of easy options out there. The easiest one that I've come across, though, is probably Linode Kubernetes Engine. It sacrifices stuff in, like, you know, it's not as feature rich as some of the other hosted platforms out there, but it's like click, 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 and you've got Kubernetes. It could hardly be easier. But that's if you're like wanting to learn it. I think for enterprises and for organizations, it's almost so ubiquitous these days. It's just like everybody's offering you a Kubernetes. It's hard to argue against saying, well, look, if you're a Red Hat customer and they're a trusted provider, like, why wouldn't you go with, and it doesn't, like, whoever your trusted provider is, right? Why wouldn't you at least explore an option for them? You know, if you're doing stuff in AWS or Azure or whatever, why wouldn't you look at the hosted Kubernetes offerings in there as well? So I feel like we're kind of at a good place where we can say to a lot of organizations, you don't have to go and necessarily get on board with a new provider and something brand new to you. You can keep some existing relationships and partnerships and explore what their Kubernetes offerings are. Now, that's not always going to be what you need. And then maybe you look at somebody more bespoke out there as well, because there are other great options out there. But I do feel like we're edging more and more towards, well, look, we already partner with whoever in our enterprise. And like everybody else, they have a Kubernetes offering. So let's go and explore that as our step one, at least. Does that make sense? Am I waffling there? Or
no, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've seen similar things. The other thing I'll throw a plug out for, because I know we see a lot of people doing this, is sometimes, you know, if you're not allowed to install stuff on your laptop, like you got a corporate laptop or something or whatever, the folks at Katacoda, who we've had on the show before, Katacoda, they do a bunch of great stuff. And it's just basically sort of structured learning. You get basically what feels like a web browser, and they've got a cluster that's running in the background for you. So if you're like, literally, I don't want to spend $10 a month, or I can't install something, like, theirs is a nice thing because it is sort of structured, but it is actually hands-on. And I know, like, we've done stuff with them with OpenShift to make a learn version of it. And so, yeah, I think what you're really hitting at, though, is there are no more barriers anymore to get started with this. Like, if you've got a laptop, you can get started. If you've got $5 a month, you can get started. If you like your vendor, they'll help you get started. Like, there's no more barriers to that anymore.
So what I say to people all the time, and I'm kind of getting sick of saying it, I say it so often, but, like, we live in a golden age of learning new technologies. Like, I think back to when I was studying for my MCSE in Windows NT, and I had to borrow this massive PC from work with one of those huge monitors, you know, the ones that, like, took a team of people bending at the knees and stuff to lift in the corner of my bedroom that I would build with CDs, and I'd trash it, and it was 5 hours to rebuild or whatever. You know, we're not there anymore. You can, in your web browser, like you say, or on your laptop, you can just, the opportunities to learn hands-on never been better. So I refer to it all the time as a golden age. Literally, it couldn't be better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, you mentioned you were seeing, you know, a lot of infrastructure people, you know, starting to come to you with this stuff. And previously, you'd seen some cloud native people. How much do you get a chance to sort of pay attention to what, like, application developers are doing? Because there's not, you know, like, we've had projects in the past, like Cloud Foundry, that had kind of a native built-in developer experience. And Kubernetes is more, I don't know, you know, it's very YAML-y, it's very CLI-based. There's not, you know, there's not really a developer tool. Maybe you are using VS Code or something. Do you find that people are like, well, if I'm an application developer, where do I get started? Or do you feel like they're like, oh no, there's plenty of tools I can use, I just have to pick the one I like? What do you hear from people in terms of, you know, what's their take on actually developing applications that have to somewhat be aware of Kubernetes and the tools that are available to them?
Yeah, so I think people are generally confused in that area, and it's an area that I hope improves massively in 2021. And I think possibly will. I think we're going to see a lot of the bigger enterprise companies, the data management companies. I don't want to necessarily drop names because I don't want to show favoritism at all. But, you know, some of your big trusted companies are at least working on these dashboards that will allow you to say, I want to deploy whatever MongoDB or something to Kubernetes. And it's almost click and it's deployed with all of the operators and things that run in the background. I wonder if we're going to get more to a position like that. And also, the conversation around, do we need like our own in-house knowledge around deploying a particular application to Kubernetes, or should we be waiting for an operator to come along that has all of like that, you know, domain-specific knowledge just coded in there for you? And I think we're moving very much, I don't know if quick enough, but very much towards that, where it's just becoming almost just click off the shelf, like a little bit like we did with the hosted Kubernetes. You can get Kubernetes, highly available, high performance, without having to know how to build it yourself, to the point where, you know, next year we'll hopefully be able to deploy and manage loads more applications to Kubernetes without having to know so much about how to actually, you know, do the plumbing and what have you.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Nigel, you know, as always, it's great to catch up with you. It's been too long. Before we go, what are some good places for folks to go find all of the good work that you're doing? And we will also get those included in the show notes.
Cheers. So this is not hubris at all. But I'm pretty much Nigel Poulton everywhere. And that was just a strategic decision because, like, if I'm not doing Kubernetes in 5 years and I've named myself Cube Nige or whatever, it's going to be weird. So I'm at Nigel Poulton on Twitter, GitHub, LinkedIn. NigelPoulton.com is my website. I have a new version of the website coming out in about a week or so. So maybe live when the podcast goes out. So pretty much just search Nigel Poulton. And you should be able to find me.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Aaron, you want to wrap it up and take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So for everyone, as always, thank you for listening. And we're kind of wrapping up the end of 2020 here. Hope everyone is both staying safe and staying healthy. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.